Hello and welcome to the Journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. This week, we'll be talking about how to smash a campaign target for your news organisation. For the last 12 months, the Bristol Cable has been trying to increase its annual membership revenue by £60,000, which would enable it to get another £40,000 from grant providers. Well, this week, the Cable hit that target thanks to a strategy that involved asking members to up their contributions, gaining new members, and developing a new tier of support called Patrons for wealthier members who can contribute up to £1,000 a year. The brains behind this operation is strategy lead Eliz Meisen. She'll be reflecting on her campaign drive over the last year, where the momentum was won and lost, and what ultimately got them over the line. There's one big lesson from today: ask and you shall receive, but know precisely what you're asking for. Want to know more? Don't go anywhere. Eliz, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thank you ever so much for coming onto the show today.
Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
You must be over the moon.
I am.
The news of the week is that the Bristol Cable has hit its annual membership drive target of £60,000, which would then entitle you to an extra £40,000 grant, bringing it up to £100,000 in total. That's the story of today, but tell us, how are you feeling having hit your campaign goal?
I'm feeling incredibly happy and mainly, I think, relieved. We have been ploughing into, you know, all of the different sort of furrows, if you like, that we feel we've been able to do for the last year. So it's been a really long campaign. There were lots of times where we sort of thought, God, are we going to make this? You know, I don't know. It's really difficult to track. So when you're talking about an increase, because we wanted to increase our membership by 50%, obviously you don't really know how close you are until you get further down the line. And so, you know, we had a real fear that we would make it to sort of 90% or something. But we've now made it to 107% as of today. Technically, you know, the deadline is actually the end of August, so August 31st. So it might be that we make it to 110% by the final deadline.
3 days to go, which is, yeah, well, at the point of talking. Yes. Anyway, but huge congratulations.
Thanks.
Take us back 12 months then, as you were about to launch this campaign drive. What was really the catalyst for all of this?
So the Bristol Cable has always been a membership organisation. We're a co-op and we are owned by our members jointly. So we currently have about 2,600 members. At the time, we had about 2,400, 2,500 members. And, you know, those people gave roughly sort of £3 a month. The only thing that we offered our members as a kind of member perk, as, you know, a lot of media organisations do nowadays, was if you pay £3 a month or more, we will send you a paper through your door. So we got this opportunity from our one remaining grant funder. We do have grant funding as well, but most of that had come to an end. And we have one remaining grant funder, which is the Reva and David Logan Foundation, who work out of America, and they fund a lot of independent journalism around the world. And they gave us this challenge. They said, if you raise your membership income to £175,000 in a year, we'll give you £40,000. And that happened to be £60,000 more than we had brought in the previous year. And so we knew, okay, this is actually a really nice round number. We have to raise our membership income by 60 grand. They're going to give us 40 grand on top, and that makes it up to 100 grand. So we immediately had this really good comms pitch to our existing members and to our new members, hopefully. And so really what we did was we said to our existing members, look, you've been giving us about £3 a month. Could you give us more? We did a little sort of market analysis, and 82%, I remember that stat because it's stuck in my brain, 82% of people said, yes, we would be willing to give you more money, sort of £5 or £10 a month. And so we knew that our existing members would be a really big part of this. And then we also thought, okay, how many new members will we be able to get, you know, during that period of time? How many could we get in a year? And so that's how we started, really, was by going, okay, what's the basic maths? What are the basic numbers? How will we communicate this massive challenge to people? And also, what resources do we have already? And obviously, you know, already what we've got is a lot of goodwill in Bristol. People who have stuck with us for 10 years, who know that we're doing this really good and quite rare journalism at the local level. So, yeah, that was how we started.
Awesome. I mean, loads of questions come to mind, but why did the foundation give you that challenge? Because it's a bit oddly specific to say, if you get this number, we'll give you £40,000 more. Where did that conversation come from?
So, you know, we quite often describe things as a match grant or a match fund because they quite often are matches. But actually, this wasn't an exact match. It was what the Logan Foundation calls a challenge grant. And I think that really sums it up. You know, they really wanted to challenge us to build our membership. It wasn't just, you know, here's a load of money. You know, you don't have to do anything for it. We're just going to give you this money because we think you're great. You know, it was an extra amount of money that we would get if we really dedicated a year to building our membership. And our membership had stagnated. I think that it's very difficult to know, you know, or give any one reason why these things happen. But, you know, if you think about it, we've just been through the pandemic, we've gone through cost of living crisis, you know, years of political turmoil, and people are really feeling, I think that people were not only feeling the pinch financially, but also, you know, people were feeling, I think, you know, there was a real lack of morale and still is a lack of morale. And we were, you know, we saw our churn go up. So we were losing members as well as gaining new members. And our membership, which had been rising and rising and rising each year until about 2021, had leveled off. And I think the vast majority, you know, of the reason for that was because of the cost of living crisis. And so what they wanted to see was, you know, you really do have to turn this around if you're going to survive as a media outlet. And we knew that that was the case. And so they gave us what at the time seemed like an almost impossible kind of challenge. But actually what it did was really light a fire under our asses. We got our act together and went, how do we raise our membership by 50% in a year? Which is, I think, the previous year or maybe the one before that, when we had actually really grown our membership, we raised it by 20% or something like that, you know, and that felt crazy. Yeah. So it was really to challenge us to turn around that stagnation in our membership.
I can definitely see that as an incentive, because by pushing you to either grow your membership or make it more engaged or make it more, you know, stronger in whatever way, the journalism that they're supporting is then more impactful, right? And they're then going to see more, you know, impact as a result of their support.
Absolutely. And, you know, all it does is build our democratic membership. You know, one of the things that we kept saying to ourselves was, we really, really want to succeed. But if we get to, say, 80% by the deadline, yeah, at least we've increased our, you know, our membership by what that would have been, you know, 45 grand or 50 grand or something, yeah, a year. So we, you know, there was only good things that could come out of it. And so we actually, while that challenge was incredibly, you know, taxing at times, it also was something that we needed to do.
Give us that percentage you mentioned again earlier. It was 82%, was it, that said your membership would be prepared to pay us slightly a bit more on their membership? What was the figure again?
It was 82% of people who we surveyed. I think we had about 200 people, yep, respond to that survey, and 82% of them said, yes, I'd be willing to pay more than I pay currently. Mm. And, you know, as I said, the vast majority, I think it was just over half of our members paid £3 a month.
Yeah.
And what we've seen during the campaign is more than 600 of our members increased their membership contributions. And that was a huge part of the campaign being successful.
Yeah. And did they indicate how much more they'd be prepared to pay, or was it just we'd be happy to pay more?
I can't remember that detail, but what I know is that we asked everybody to increase by £2 a month, because we thought, if most people are on three and we're now offering these new membership benefits at five, that's a really nice round number to get people, you know, to get people to increase. But quite a lot of people went from 3 to 10. We had quite a few people who contacted us to say, I increased a couple of months ago, but I will increase again because I'm really inspired by what you guys are doing. You know, so we had a few people sort of increase by really odd amounts, like £7 a month and things like that.
But it was their choice. They could bump it up however much they wanted.
Exactly. Yeah. So we said, one of the things we worked out when we were doing our early maths was, if every single current member increased their monthly amount by £2 a month, then we would have hit the campaign target overnight. You know, that would have been 60 grand extra a year.
Yeah, and then, right.
And so all we needed was, you know, some of those people to do that, and it made a massive difference. And so it ended up being, yes, 620 something, I think it has been now, who have increased their amount.
Did Did you lose people in the act of asking people to pay more?
We did, yeah. So our churn has continued. You know, you lose members all the time. And sometimes that's because, you know, people's financial situations have changed. Sometimes that's because people have just become a bit disengaged with you and they're not that interested anymore. And sometimes that is because people move away. So we never mandate that people have to tell us why they're leaving, but we do give them a questionnaire. So it's difficult to know why. But we have seen a slight change in the ratio of how many people are joined to how many people are leaving. During sort of 2021, 22, when our membership sort of stagnated, we were seeing an equal amount of people joining and leaving. And now during the campaign, we've seen it shift quite significantly in favour of people joining.
Really?
So we have lost people across the year, of course. You know, that's always going to happen. But it is something that we've managed to turn around, particularly in the second half of the campaign, as we've really gained momentum and we've seen a lot more people joining. So I think we've just been quite successful at increasing the rate of people joining rather than, you know, trying to ensure that people don't leave.
But it's not as though it caused a spike in churns where people are like, this is outrageous. Why are you asking me more? And, there and then. You didn't quite notice that response.
Absolutely not. In fact, I only remember two emails throughout the whole year where people sort of made any comment about us asking for more money. And, you know, one of them was just a single line that said something like, oh, great, the Bristol Cable's gone capitalist. And I thought, OK, that's fair enough. You know, like, fair comment. But, you know, we need more money to be sustainable. And I think the, you know, vast majority of people understood that. And, you know, in some ways, it's just... you know, it's just a bit of human psychology. If you ask people to give you £3 a month and you offer them a paper through the door in response, most people are going to go, okay, cool. But if you ask them for £5 a month and £10 a month and give them, you know, event discounts and early podcast access and things like that, vast majority of people will give you £5 or £10 a month. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think most people think there's anything wrong with that. So we've actually had a really good response on the whole.
So the Bristol Cable now has more than 2,600 paying members, around 120 more than at the start of the campaign 12 months ago. But the money from the new members, and from members who upped their contributions, would not have been enough to hit the £60,000 target. Eliz also created the patron membership tier for wealthier members who are prepared to offer larger amounts. They have the same voting rights as any other member, but they get a special impact report to show what their money is being spent on. Having started from scratch, the Cable now has 15 patrons spending up to £1,000 a year each, and Eliz now tells us how she landed these big spenders.
Patron members are offered an impact report. So we, you know, send them a sort of bumper paper version of the financial report that we give at our AGM to all of our members. And we sort of, you know, send it to them with a bit of a note that says something from me about, you know, the first one I'm writing actually at the moment, because it's a kind of post-campaign report. But, you know, it's a note that says, hi, I'm Eliz. This is what I've been doing. This is how we've been spending the money. And, you know, and we give that to all of our members to an extent at the AGM. But, you know, if you're giving somebody £1,000 a year, obviously you want to know what they're doing with that money. And I think it's just a nice thing to have.
Sure.
In some ways, you could look at it as, you know, one patron member is worth, you know, 100 £10 a month members if you want to, but we are really clear that this is a strategy to make us sustainable and for us to allow people to give what they can, rather than trying to make it into a kind of value system.
I hear you, and that's a fair distinction completely. But to be clear, you didn't have any of these patrons 12 months ago, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
This is a whole new tier of membership that you've offered. I mean,
exactly, yeah. You know, and again, it's the sort of ask and you shall receive. You know, we didn't ask anybody to give us lots of money before, unless, you know, obviously they were grant funders. We didn't ask that of our membership. And so it's simply something that we have said, this is something we need. And, you know, people that can afford it have responded to that.
Did you specifically look for people and target them, or did they just come to you? The patrons specifically, I mean.
So it was a bit of both. You know, quite a lot of the time we would reach out, you know, over the year to people at other institutions, for example. That was a really useful thing for us, was to go to other organisations in Bristol that had been around a lot longer than us. And so they've got a lot more experience in raising money, and said, you know, can you think of anybody who's a real, you know, news junkie kind of thing, who we can approach and say, you know, are you interested in becoming a patron member of the cable, especially if they're a cable member already? You know, we could approach them. And even if they said no, we could say, OK, cool. Well, who do you know that, you know, might become a patron? And so a lot of it was just, you know, that dreaded word, networking. And then a lot of the rest of it was also just contacting our existing members. And quite a few people from our membership reached out to us to say, you know, I've been a £5 a month member of the cable for the last 7 years, but I could afford to be a patron. You know, how do I sign up? What do I do? And so it was a mixture of us reaching out to people and then people responding to that.
Was it more one or the other, or was it about even? Or
I would say that the people that reached out to us came from our outreach. So it really was us doing that outreach. You know, again, it's a lot of it is about asking and about incentive, giving people incentives, communicating for, you know, we didn't get our first patron for, I think it was a good sort of 2-3 months after we launched.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was about communicating what we're doing, why we're doing this, and why we need patron members. Why have we set up this tier of membership?
Yeah.
And after that outreach, people responded. So I think it was much more us reaching out to people.
And you said they came from institutions. Like what? What sort of examples?
So, for example, there's the Bristol Beacon, which is a big music venue in the city. Bristol Old Vic, for example, you know, they have a really big or had a really big when they did their renovation.
Right.
Sort of, I don't know if they called it a patron program, but it's effectively that. There's a new local eco centre called Sparks that has taken over the empty Marks and Spencers on the Bristol High Street, Broadmead. And, you know, we were just kind of going to all of these different organisations in Bristol and saying, you know, is there anyone who supported you? Is there anyone you know that we can talk to, that you suggest we talk to? So then we also talked to people who's, you know, have a similar sort of job to me at those institutions. So at the, I mean, I'm called the strategy lead and I do lots of different things. A lot of them are to do with our finances, but at organisations that have more staff than us, usually you might have a fundraising director or a development director. So I went to speak to those people as well at those organisations to sort of say, you know, not necessarily can you give me your address book, but, you know, who should I speak to? Point me in the right direction.
But they understand that they're supporting a news outlet, right? So what happens the day that your reporting may need to turn on them?
So I think that one of the things that we have to be really careful about, particularly with the patron members, for example, is like we do need a lot of patron members in order to ensure that patron members dropping out doesn't hurt us financially. And we always launched it with that in mind. So we make this really clear to our members, you know, as well, particularly when members become directors, because our director board of directors, sorry, is elected from the Bristol Cable membership. And, you know, it's really easy for somebody in a position as a director to sort of think, oh, OK, well, you know, I'm quite an influential person now. And they might say, oh, we think you should cover this or we think you should cover that. And we're really clear with people that they don't get editorial influence over the cable. That is the one thing that just isn't up for grabs with us. And obviously that's quite difficult because that's something that a lot of people want to have. And we've made that clear to our patrons as well, that this is, you know, not something where they have a special relationship where they can start sort of dictating the editorial line. It's that they're doing this to support Bristol, basically, as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, they want investigative journalism for Bristol and they're in the financial position to be able to support that to a greater degree. What we're doing now that we've kind of finished the campaign is continuing that search, trying to find patron members all the time. Because, you know, if we did decide that we wanted to, you know, investigate anyone in our membership, we've got to be prepared for that person to leave, right?
Yeah.
And so we just need to build that patron membership up to a point where, you know, in some cases people can decide to leave and it doesn't really, it doesn't really affect us.
Was it a deal breaker for any patrons that you were speaking to or potential patrons where this maybe came up in conversation and they said, you know, and walked away from it? Did that happen at all or not?
No. It may well be that it was. No one said that to us, though. You know, I think I only had conversations with maybe two or three people who initially said, yes, I'm potentially interested, and then ultimately didn't decide to become patron members.
Right.
So it may have influence them. But like a lot of the time, that wasn't really what we were talking about. You know, I think that most people who were interested in becoming patron members in the first place already knew what the cable
stood for. Yeah.
They already know that we kind of live and die by our reputation to an extent, and that, you know, we wouldn't be taking editorial influence from anyone. So I don't think that would have come as a surprise. But yeah, no one said, sorry, you know, editorial influence or I'm out, kind of thing.
No, of course. But what you've said previously is, you know, enjoy this moment for sure, but, you know, the hard work continues, the outreach, the membership drive, the patron, you know, search continues at this point, because if you're in a position down the line where £1,000 potentially disappears, you need to have a way to, you know, fill that void.
Yeah. One of the things that we did, one of our sort of tactics, if you like, was to ask people for annual memberships, because they're just that little bit more secure. So rather than doing £10 a month, doing £120 a year. And actually, we only need 10 people joining at £120 a year to more than replace a single patron who's paying £1,000 a year. So, you know, I do think that the amounts of money that we're asking for are actually, you know, we've kind of already set it up in a way that if a single patron decides to leave, you know, unless that patron is giving us sort of £5,000, £10,000, it's actually really not a huge issue for us. We would obviously not want to lose any members, you know, at any time. We would want to only gain members and retain them forever. But, you know, that just isn't realistic. And we know that.
No. Did lots of people take up the annual membership, or was it more people on the monthly basis? What did you find?
No. We do still get a lot of monthlies. And, you know, one thing that was very interesting to see was the absolute minimum that you can give to become a cable member is £1 a month. We almost had £1 a month members just drop off completely after the early days. I think the early days, it was a very tantalizing prospect of, you know, I don't know anything about this co-op, but I can join for £1 a month and find out about it. And so in the early days, a lot of people joined for sort of £1, £2, £3 a month. But these days, hardly anybody does. But when we said to people sort of a few months before the deadline, actually annuals would be really useful now to help us get to our target and to give us more ability to plan financially and give us a bit more security, we found quite a few people, I would say at least one or two people a month, joining at £12 a year, which is, you know, it's interesting that people would say that, you know, £12 a year is a bit more appealing than the £1 a month figure. So I don't know why that was. I think, you know, just the ask for annuals again is sort of ask and you shall receive. You know, we've got about half the people joining now are joining annually, whereas I would say before we asked, it was probably about 1 in 10. So that's a really massive shift for us as well.
A headline annual target, like £60,000, can seem overwhelming at first, but something you'll notice Eliz does a lot is she breaks down the numbers into smaller, more manageable targets. There's been a few examples we've heard already. If every member spent £2 more a month, that would hit the campaign target overnight. 10 annual members would replace a patron who withdrew their support. In the final stretch of the campaign, Eliz was messaging people along the lines of, "The campaign just hit 90%. We're now £7,000 away from our target. We only need about 2 or 3 more patron members or 100 annual members." This makes the ask to support something very tangible and real. Not to mention, these bite-sized messages are powerful ways to either keep morale up internally or invite people to support the campaign externally.
For my own sort of sanity, I have to compartmentalize things and be able to see the map and the patterns and how it all fits together. I kind of quite enjoy doing that because I find it quite calming to work those things out. And I don't know if you remember when we first announced that we were doing the campaign and I wrote about it and I sent you, I think, a press release, and it had in it that image that had, you know, we want to get £30,000 from patrons and then £15,000 from new members and £15,000 from a raise in our membership. And that's roughly what we did. The numbers were a little different. I think we ended up raising about £27,000 from patrons and about £25,000 maybe from existing members and the rest from new members. I can't remember exactly what the numbers are, but it was different to what we planned. But the fact we had a plan was useful, you know, and gave us a constant sort of mission and steer, and also a way to react and respond. So we planned to get the first half, 30,000, by the end of the year. We started at the end of September. We gave ourselves sort of 2 and a bit months, because no one does anything over Christmas, to get that first 30,000. We didn't manage to do that, but we did hit 20,000. And so we went, okay, let's tell everyone that we've hit 20,000. You know, that's a third of the way. It's not half of the way, but it's a third of the way. And so now we have to completely regroup and go, we were hoping to do the rest of the campaign, you know, £30,000, a half, in the next 8 months, whatever it was. But actually now we've got £40,000 to raise in the next 8 months. So let's recalibrate our expectations and go from there. So really doing all of that compartmentalization helps us to kind of constantly stay on top of things.
I think that's smart, because you've mitigated for the lulls in throughout the year, but you've also accounted for those moments in the year where you need to keep the momentum up, check people back in on how far you've come so far.
Yes.
You know, the distance left to go, as it were.
Yes.
I know that, you know, in the final month, the final stretch, you know, you are really in the overdrive mode of going, we're nearly there, final push and all of that. So throughout the year, you've had these moments that you knew, whether it be strong activity and a bit of inactivity.
Absolutely. So number one, I think those lulls are fine and actually necessary. You know, you can tell by the slightly crazed look in my eyes that, like, you know, I needed some downtime over the year, because if I didn't have that, you know, I would be sort of a puddle right now. But I think that, like, also, you can't expect everybody else to be excited about what you're doing for a year. You know, you've got to give people breathing space from constant requests. You know, that is something that has certainly has been a learning, you know, I think you kind of know it intuitively maybe, but it was really a learning curve for me when I realized, you know, I'm kind of getting sick of sending these emails asking people for money. So I don't know what they're feeling when they see it come into their inbox. And, you know, having the plan is a good thing in the first place, and you can always regroup and re-strategize.
How about the moments where there was really sort of fast and explosive growth? What points of the year did you see that?
So, yeah, really kind of the top and tail. So at the beginning, you know, we had got our plan, we'd got all of our comms in order. We, you know, we had a email campaign. We also had some billboards, and then we, you know, made videos doing a few vox pops outside those billboards. So we had a social media campaign as well. We worked with a really good local agency called If Not Now, who are specialists in kind of helping people to do campaigns where they're doing sort of good work, you know, sort of stuff to do with the environment and stuff. So they were really, really helpful for us getting that momentum at our launch.
Oh, was that the give Murdoch the finger, give the cable a fiver?
That's, I mean, right, so yeah.
Genius, by the
That's
way.
Right. But I know, they take. Well, I wish I'd come up with that, but that was all them. And that was really funny as well, actually, because I don't know if you remember, but when we spoke around the time of the launch, Lachlan Murdoch had just taken over from Rupert Murdoch. And so we had this little panic, but actually we ended up using it to our advantage and just kind of saying, you know, Murdoch's in the news, he's trending at the moment, so we're just going to jump on that. You know, and it was really exciting. I had quite a few people, you know, we printed some flyers, and I went, you know, around all of these places in Bristol on foot, giving out all these flyers. And I had at least two people that I remember who I went up to them and I said, can I leave some flyers in your shop or, you know, your restaurant or whatever? And they said no. And then I said, what about if they say, give Murdoch the finger? And they went, yeah, okay, go on.
Yeah,
then.
Happy accident,
you know, so
right?
That goodwill in Bristol for the cable and what we were doing and the kind of slightly silly tone we were taking really worked at first. And that was really exciting.
So it was the top and tail of the campaign. You really saw the most energy and momentum. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then at the end, you know, we started to look at, okay, well, hang on a second. Now we've got some more reliable numbers again. We know exactly what money has come in, you know, because our accountants kind of give us the report, you know, we can see it actually in writing. You know, we get sort of 80, 90%. And then you start to be able to say to people, well, we need 5 more patrons and 100 more annual members and we're done. So you start to get really good messages that you can give people.
Mm. Well, make sure to breathe in this moment and not to go headfirst into another one, and, you know, give yourself some, you know, pat on the back and kudos. But as we wrap up this conversation, leave our audience, if you would, with a couple of your top tips and best learnings over the last 12 months on, you know, nailing a campaign drive, if you would.
Sure. I mean, I think that the first thing to say is give yourself lots of time to plan. For sure. Know what it is that you want to achieve and come up with a strategy to make that happen. Try and engage your whole team as much as you can, because, you know, a diversity of opinion and a diversity of ideas is incredibly useful. I would also say, you know, think about other people who have already done this. You know, what other organizations in your city can you learn from, or what other organizations around the country can you learn from? It's definitely not something that, you know, you can do by yourself. You've really got to get other people's influence and help and thoughts and opinions. And yeah, just keep learning and re-strategizing, and definitely give yourself a bit of space in those lulls to, you know, not campaign for a little bit and give everyone a break as well as yourself.
And the most decisive factor in terms of your success, what would you put that down to?
Wow, that's a really good question. And I would say, I think being responsive to what is working and what isn't working. I mean, the fact that we had a year in some ways was very daunting, but it was also a blessing because it gave us a lot of time to go, right, that worked, that didn't. We're going to carry on doing that. We're going to stop doing that. So being able to be, responsive to what is and isn't working. Also, get yourself some really, really good colleagues who are incredibly good at things like spreadsheets that you are not good at.
We love a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I love one. I just don't know how to work.
Liz, this has been a blast. Thank you ever so much for coming on the show. Really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, bro.
My takeaway for today is ask and you shall receive, but know precisely what you're asking for. A big one-year membership target can be very daunting, so break that down into manageable chunks. This is good both for team morale and public promotion, but it also means you can anticipate the peaks and valleys throughout the year. You can expect people to be less engaged during Christmas. That's fine, no need to panic if the money isn't coming in then, but make sure you top and tail your campaign with those strong messages too. But what did you learn today? I'd love to know. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter/X@JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. That's all we have time for this week, though. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.